It's a good turnoff for 8:30 in the morning. You're here, I'm sure, to hear about the World Energy Outlook and the update from the IEA. And it's our pleasure here to have Dr. Fadi Barol with us. He's a familiar face to all of you, I'm sure. He's the chief economist and head of the economic analysis division at the IEA. He's also the organizer and director of the World Energy Outlook series, which most people feel is clearly the flagship publication of the IEA. This year's WEO focuses on oil and gas resources in the Middle East and North Africa, a timely subject to say the least. The report includes separate chapters on Algeria, Kuwait, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. In addition, the outlook looks at some of the issues dealing with global refining and also a deferred investment scenario, which I'm sure we'll take several questions on. Dr. Barol's presentation is on the record. What we'd like to do is have the official presentation be on the record to provide for more candid and open Q&A response. And if you hold your questions to the end, that'll be helpful. We're going to have the Q&As be off the record, if that's okay, because we want to stimulate the best possible discussion that we can have. We will post the entire presentation on our website, hopefully early this afternoon. So please welcome, join me in welcoming Dr. Barol. And with that, we'll be able to get going. Thank you very much.
Perhaps, yeah. So, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to be with you here today and to give you some of the views of the IEA, how we think the world energy system could develop in the next 25 years, and what is the role of Middle East and North African countries in that very equation. This book, World Energy Outlook 2005, which we released 7th of November, a couple of days ago in London, focuses, as Frank mentioned, on the Middle East and North African countries and examines their oil and gas supply prospects and related question marks about those prospects. For this work, in addition to our colleagues at the IEA, we work with several experts throughout the world. About 100 experts contributed outside of the IEA to this work, most of them based in the Middle East and North Africa, reservoir engineers, consultants, people working for the oil service companies and so on, but also people who know the region, outside of the region, help us. And two of them are with us today, Frank himself and Al Hekbuk, made important contributions, and we are thankful to them as well as other colleagues. Today, in during my presentation, I would like to discuss three different policy scenarios, if I may say so. The first one we call the reference scenario, in which there are no major policy changes, we assume. Neither the consuming countries change their current energy policies, nor the major producing countries do try to, through deliberate policies, want to have a major impact on the oil markets. They invest as much as it is required from them. They increase the production capacity as much as the world demands from them. So reference scenario, more or less a business as usual scenario. The second one, as Frank mentioned, is perhaps a key one, which we call the deferred investment scenario, in which we look at the policies which could be put in place by major producing countries if they do not increase their production capacity as much as the world demands from them, as a result of a series of reasons which I will discuss with you. And what are the implications of deferring the investment in oil and gas production on the global scale? This will be the second scenario that I would like to discuss with you. Third and last, would look at the policy initiative coming from the consuming nations, consuming countries, the IEA countries, US, Canada, European countries, Japan, Australia, and the others, plus China and India, if they do want to change their policies. There are many policies under consideration, but not yet legally enacted. If they were to be introduced through two major factors, one is the environmental concerns, the other one is the energy security concerns. What happens? We would like to look at this also policy initiative, policy scenario coming from the consuming nations. To sum up, business as usual, first. Second, a policy initiative on the deferred investment scenario coming from the producing countries. And third one, a policy framework, policy scenario coming from the, driven by the consuming nations. Now, let me first come and talk to you about the reference scenario. If the countries in the Middle East invest as much as the world requires from them, and there are no major changes in the policies in the developed countries, OECD countries, plus China and India and other major countries, consuming countries of the world. So I will first make a general picture of the world energy system and then go to the MENA countries in the context of reference scenario. But before going that, perhaps just to make you aware that International Energy Agency revised its oil price assumptions substantially upwards. For an organization like the IEA, which is considered by many as conservative and trying to calm the markets, it is a bold move. We think that the WTI prices in nominal terms in 2010, for example, could come about $46 WTI in nominal terms, which is much higher than what we thought last year and much higher than what we would like to see in the markets. Of course, how we have done it is that mainly based on our analysis, we have looked more than 200 fields worldwide on a field-by-field basis, and what are the projects coming and what kind of, how much oil they can bring to the markets. We look at the refinery capacity expansions, and we compare this against our demand expectations. And what we have seen is that with those projects coming on stream, after realistic assessment of these projects, we do not expect a major comfort to take place in the markets, which would bring the prices to the levels that we as consumers would like to see, therefore higher oil prices. So, of course, this has changed our view about the oil demand significantly, and in 2030, we have our expectation of the global oil demand growth is less than what we thought last year as a result of a price response. Now, let me come to the how we see the world energy system in general to develop under this scenario. The oil is still the most important fuel. Gas followed by gas. Gas is the rising star in terms of fossil fuels. Coal is losing market share, especially in the OECD countries. And with the current policies in place, we do not expect renewables, neither renewables nor nuclear, could make a major change. And oil and gas together make more than 60% of the growth in the global energy system, again, with the current policies in place. This picture has several implications, of course, in the reference scenario, in the no policy scenario, and one of them is very key, at least we think at the IEA is a key, namely rising carbon dioxide emissions. The carbon dioxide emissions will rise more than 50% between now and 2030, mainly driven by the developing countries. Just to perhaps make a point on China here, the role of China, according to our projections, the carbon dioxide emissions growth in China alone between now and 2030 is much higher, 30% higher than the CO2 emission growth in the same period of United States plus Canada plus all European countries plus Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and Korea, just to highlight the very fact that China is a major driver of the CO2 emissions growth. This book is more mainly on the supply side, oil and gas coming from the MENA countries. But before going to the supply side, I would like to bring a point to your attention, which I think is very important to understand the political context, especially from the consuming countries' point of view. If you look at the last 5-6 years, almost all the growth in the oil demand in the OECD countries came from the transportation sector. And this is a rather a recent phenomenon, and we think that in the future, our projections show in the future this trend will continue not only in the OECD countries but also in the non-OECD countries. It is, we think, very important to note that it is transportation sector is the driver, as it is very difficult in the transportation sector to find alternatives to oil. In the past, we had two major price shocks, as 73-74 and 79-80, and during those price shocks, we were using oil almost all the sectors of the economy. We were using oil as an input to the power gen sector. We were using oil in the industry, households. But at that time, we were able to substitute oil with others. In the power sector, we switched from oil to nuclear or gas or renewables or coal. Same thing for the heating at home. We went to other fuels. We had some room of maneuver. But now, in the transportation sector, it is not the case. At least it is not as easy as it is in the past. So the maneuver room of the consumers are rather limited, and there is a concentration of demand in a sector where it is rather rigid from a consumption point of view. Together with this, I wanted to highlight another implication of our analysis in terms of the refinery sector. The increasing role of transportation in the oil demand makes the demanded barrel lighter and cleaner in general when you look at it in global terms. And this is very much in contrast with our analysis in terms of what kind of crude, the average crude quality in the future. As I mentioned, we look at top 200 fields and all of the gravity. We see that the crude quality is going to worsen, heavier, and more sulfur will be there. So according to our projections, we expect to refine this 150 million barrels per day by 2030, between now and 2030. You need about $400 billion for the refinery sector. And out of this $400 billion, one-third goes to the upgrading in the refinery sector, and therefore it will be a major part of the oil industry. The oil production, where it comes from, also changes, like the demand, as you see here. And what we see is that we do not think that the outside of the MENA, Middle East, North Africa region, the key producers, we do not have high expectations oil production to grow. In terms of OECD countries, in the North Sea, Gulf of Mexico, our expectations are rather not high. And in terms of other places, Russia, West Africa, there may be some gains in terms of the production growth, but this will not change the picture that the share of MENA will grow in the future in our, again, reference scenario, no policy change scenario. Of course, the very reason for that is the why MENA, Middle East, North African countries, would increase their share is because of this very striking, I believe, slide, that their proven oil reserves are higher than 60%, and the production, in terms of production, it is about one-third of the global oil production goes there. And with the increasing oil demand globally and sluggish prospects sluggish production prospects outside of the MENA region, we expect the gap would be met, filled more and more by the MENA countries having these huge reserves and cheap geology, easy geology and cheap production costs. Now, let me now turn to a couple of trends in MENA, focus on the MENA countries one by one, and again reminding you that this is the scenario in which they invest as much as the world demands from them, they increase the production as much as world demands from them, and there are no major policy initiatives from the consuming nations. In terms of crude oil and NGL production on that very region, we think with the increasing volumes coming from the region, their share, which is about 35% today, could go up to 44% in 2030, increasing significantly. And of course, the main player here is the Saudi Arabia, which produces today close to 11 million barrels per day together with NGL, could go up to 18 million barrels per day in 2030 with the current reserves and the domestic capital they have. In line with this is the exports from the region is also increasing. Again, Saudi Arabia is a key player here in terms of the exports. Iraq, especially after 2010, we expect to bring more volumes to the market, and other countries do also contribute to the exports coming from the region to the consuming nations. Especially, we expect these exports will be oriented rather to the Asian countries. In terms of natural gas exports, the region is also very rich in terms of gas exports, and when we look at the gas prospects in many OECD countries, as well as some non-OECD countries outside of the MENA, except for Russia, the prospects are not very bright, and we do think that the gas exports in the from the region can increase substantially. Key countries here is the Algeria, Qatar, and we think Qatar will take over Algeria, being the number one in the export in the region around 2010. Algeria, Qatar, and if the investments come, Iran can be a major exporter of gas in our reference scenario, in our no policy change scenario. This increasing exports in terms of LNG, mainly LNG in the from the Middle East, plus the increasing exports in terms of oil, have serious implications for the energy security, we believe. One of the statistics I wanted to bring to your attention is the very fact that in the last 25 years, there were 17 supply disruptions in the world, which are higher than 0.5 million barrels per day, and 14 out of that 17 took place in the Middle East region for whatever the reason is, just to, highlighting the very important fact. In addition to that, we have another issue which we want to highlight with you, that with the growing production in that very region, we think the how the oil will come to the consuming markets is perhaps an issue that deserves some attention. There are about one-fifth, about 20% of the global oil production today goes through the three regions, three straits. We call them Dire Straits, Hormuz, Suez, and Bab el-Mandab, these three straits. And this may, this will grow in the future, this 20% share. It will come about one-third, about 35%. In 2030, with the increasing production coming from those regions. Why is it important? It is important because if there is a supply disruption for whatever the reason is, it may be an accident, it can be piracy, as we see a lot in Malacca, or it can be a terrorist attack. This may well have serious implications for bringing oil to the markets in the consuming nations, and serious implications for the global energy and economy. Now let me turn to some of the countries, perhaps some of the more important countries in the region, starting with Saudi Arabia. We have with great interest followed the discussions took place at CSIS and elsewhere about Saudi Arabia, and therefore we wanted to look at it carefully. What we think is that Saudi Arabia has both the reserves and the, in general terms, the domestic capital to increase its production capacity significantly in the future. So we do not have major questions there, but what we have some question marks is whether or not Saudi Arabia will want to increase the production capacity as much as the world demands from them. This is the question that we have about the Saudi Arabian oil production prospects rather than the availability of reserves in that very country. Another country which is also a key one is Iran in the region with huge reserves, and we think the Iran production can also increase substantially in the future. But unlike Saudi Arabia, Iran would need a significant amount of capital, and especially coming from, or they need to come from the in terms of foreign direct investments. But we are not very sure whether or not the current investment framework climate in Iran would help the government to get money in to the oil industry. And we are also sure that the recent statements made by the Iranian president would necessarily help to that very cause. Another important issue in terms of Iran here, perhaps I should also highlight, that the Iran domestic oil product demand is growing very strongly, 8-9% per year, mainly driven by the demographics, economic growth, but also very strong subsidies. And therefore, the in terms of Iran, the growth in exports exports prospects are much less than the production as a result of very high growth in the domestic oil product demand. A third country that I wanted to share with you is Iraq. I believe we have a bit not very optimistic expectations in terms of Iraq, a country which produces about 2 million barrels per day today. We think around 2010 they could reach only to 3 million barrels per day, not because of, the reserves issue, but the security and the stability in the country may not allow the increase in the production capacity. But after the security is established, we can see major gains in terms of volumes increasing and the production capacity increasing. We know that the Iraqi oil industry and the workers there make heroic work in order to maintain the current production and transport it to the consuming markets. But this is a bit different than developing new fields or rehabilitation in the current oil fields and increasing the production capacity. So therefore, we are a bit on the more careful side in terms of the Iraq's medium-term oil production increase. looking at the North Africa, we expect in Algeria, who's a major exporter today, will increase its gas production capacity substantially. Coming to Europe, lots of discussions along those sides, bringing gas to Europe and elsewhere via pipelines, and there are a lot of projects in terms of bringing the LNG to the European markets as well as to the other markets. Algeria is making very courageous steps in order to get the foreign direct investment in that country. So I will not go all the countries one by one, but in our reference scenario with this increase in the production capacity of oil and gas, the countries of MENA, Middle East, North Africa, will increase their export revenue substantially. In real terms, it will double between now and 2030, bringing a lot of, income to that very region. Perhaps I should also make a note here that in our book, for each single chapter of those countries, in most of them, we made when we look at their economies, in fact, we work with the IMF and other colleagues in that context, we highlighted the very fact that in most of those countries, the economy is relying more and more on the oil and gas export revenues, and we do not see in most of them major efforts in order to diversify their economies and bring it to a broader economic base. And in case of a collapse of the prices, of course, this would have serious implications in those economies, and perhaps also bearing in mind the fact that about 50% of the population is under 20 years old and looking for jobs, unemployment is a key issue, and so on. This collapse of prices may well have implications beyond the economies of those countries. Perhaps a final point on the total energy investments in that region. Looking at oil, gas, upstream, downstream, and electricity, the investments, We think the region needs every year $56 billion for the whole energy sector. Investments for oil, it's about $23 billion each year, upstream plus downstream. Perhaps 2 points here. We always put attention on the, as consumers, the needs for the oil upstream sector. But when you look at the investment requirements for the electricity sector, together with the desalination, we see that the amount of money needed for the electricity sector is more or less equal to what they need to increase the production capacity on the upstream sector. So there are some other needs in the energy sector which would require some attention. The other point is that in terms of oil, you need about $23 billion out of this 56, and both upstream and downstream. And then we look at the last 10 years, 2003, backwards 10 years, we think that the if they want to come to that level, those countries do need to increase their investment efforts substantially. So this brings me, in fact, to the second scenario we have, the deferred investment scenario. What happens if those countries, the Middle East and North African countries, do not increase their investment efforts substantially, as we assumed it would be done in our reference scenario? What are the implications of that? And I wanted to share the second scenario with you. As I said, we look at the implications of such policies in those countries, and it may be for different reasons why those countries would choose not to invest as much as required or as timely as required. It may be a result of deliberate policies of those countries in order to keep the markets tight and to see rather high prices in the oil markets. The second one, many countries in that very region may think that they need to leave their reserves for the next generations, and they do not want to do so. Both of these considerations are there very right. They are sovereign countries. It's very legitimate to decide what to do. Or some countries may want to increase their production capacity, but they do not have enough capital to do so. I talk about, for example, Iran. It might be a case. So as a result of a number of factors, there is a real risk, we thought, and as we have seen in the last 10 years, that the production capacity may not increase as much as it is required, with serious implications on the international oil prices and energy system in general. Let me bring you a number to your attention, which I think very striking. Between 1988 and 2003, global oil demand increased about 16 million barrels per day, whereas MENA production capacity increased 600,000 barrels per day. So there is a big contrast between these two. So with the higher, lower production coming from as a result of lower investment in that region, has serious implications on the prices. Tighter supply coming from the cheap oil regions would increase the prices. And on average, in the next 25 years, we have calculated that the prices compared to reference scenario could increase more than 30%. Just to give you a flavor of that, I mentioned that in our reference scenario, oil prices, WTI nominal terms in 2010, will be around $46. In our deferred investment scenario, they reach about $53, again, WTI in nominal terms. Higher oil prices do have an implication on the, of course, on gas significantly, as in most cases they are linked to each other, and electricity and the coal prices are also affected, and they altogether have implications for the coal and gas as well for the MENA region that I am going to show you in a minute. This is the reference scenario, the blue line here, in terms of if they would invest as much as it is required, as much as the world demand goes. And this is the deferred investment scenario. The production still grows, comes from the region, but it grows much more slowly compared to our reference scenario. For example, again, in terms of Saudi Arabia, I just mentioned that the production today is close to 11 million barrels per day, and in our reference scenario, they reached 18 million barrels per day. In our deferred investment scenario, they could reach up to 14 million barrels per day, with serious implications for the global oil markets. Just perhaps a look again on the gas exports. Higher oil prices have an impact on the gas prices, and the higher gas prices would choke off the global gas demand. And as MENA comes as a new supplier, additional supplier, swing supplier to the markets, it will be the MENA countries who would suffer a lot in terms of the decrease in their gas exports. Here, of course, another interesting issue is that there are some countries in the Middle East who do not export a lot of oil, but export lots of gas. It means as a result of some major oil-producing countries' policies, in order to have the prices, oil prices very high, these gas-exporting countries may find themselves in a rather difficult situation as a result of higher gas prices and lower gas exports. So this is the second scenario, deferred investment scenario, which means lower oil and gas production in MENA countries as a result of lower investment going into the upstream sector, and therefore we find ourselves with higher international oil and gas prices with serious implications on the global economic growth. The third scenario is an attempt we did at the IEA to look at the implications of the consuming nations' likely policies to be introduced. A preliminary version of this scenario has been presented at the G8 summit at Green Eagles to the G8 leaders plus five major non-G8 countries, China, India, Brazil, and the others. And it has been endorsed, and IEA has been asked to look at it much more in depth and to come up with some results and with some suggestions to be presented at the next G8 summit in Moscow in Russia. So what we do in this scenario is that in many IEA and other major consuming nations, there are two significant concerns in terms of energy and environmental policy making. One of them is the energy security. The other one is the environmental concern. And many countries are considering to introduce new policies in order to address these two challenges. And we believe that the high international oil prices are an additional and a strong trigger for the governments to put these policies in place in addition to their existing concerns. So a deferred investment scenario, I mentioned, may be itself an important trigger that the alternative policies are put in place. What are those policies? There are, of course, several policies that are which are in the pipeline in many countries, but not yet legally enacted. And they are such as efficiency policies to use oil, gas, electricity much more efficiently. Looking at the renewables, biofuels, for example, is a key word here. And looking at nuclear closely in many countries as opposed to increasing gas import dependency in from the MENA countries. These are the policies that the governments are considering. Of course, some technologies and alternative use of energy is considered, again, very closely, and it may well be the fact that at least some of them could be put in place very soon. What we have done in our work is that the ones which all of these policies are listed in a transparent manner in our book, and we said if those policies were simply to be introduced as of end of 2005, how would it change the picture from the consuming nations' point of view? And when you look at the list, you will see that they are by no means revolutionary policies, breakthrough policies. They are policies that we are discussing almost on a daily manner. A first implication of this type of policies would be on the saving of energy. Just looking at oil, for example, in the year 2004, We use worldwide about 82, a bit higher than 82 million barrels per day of oil. In our reference scenario, no policy change scenario, it reaches 115 million barrels per day. But if you put these policies, alternative policies in place, we believe that we can easily save, easily is a bit exaggerated, but we can save 12 million barrels per day of oil by 2030, which is higher than the Saudi production today. So this savings, the picture is similar in the gas markets. These savings are very important from the coming from the demand side, making the markets a bit more comfortable, takes the pressure from the supply side, and as a result of that, we think the oil prices compared to reference scenario can be about 15% lower in the case of alternative scenario by having less pressure on the markets. Of course, an additional benefit of this for the consuming nations is decreasing the reliance on a very few number of countries. But another major benefit is of such policies, an automatic benefit is this decrease in the CO2 emissions growth, which we think is a major concern. And the CO2 emissions can be about 16% less in 2030 compared to reference scenario, no policy scenario. And this is, again, not peanuts. It is equal to current CO2 emissions of US plus Canada put together. So if the consuming nations, as they have discussed and as they have proposed at the G8 summit, were to put in place such alternative policies in terms of efficiency, alternative fuels, and others, they can have significant impacts in terms of the growth in oil demand, in energy demand, and in terms of CO2 emissions, and also some positive, at least from consumers' point of view, positive implications for the international energy prices. My last slide is perhaps a bit of a complicated one. It is about comparing the cost of these three scenarios from the consumer's perspective, especially the alternative scenario and the deferred investment scenario vis-a-vis the reference scenario, no policy scenario, from the consumer's perspective. I have told you that in the deferred investment scenario, the oil prices are about 33%, 32% higher compared to reference scenario as a result of higher cost of oil. The consumers have to pay more compared to a reference scenario. More money goes from their own pocket. And in the alternative scenario, as a result of savings on the demand side and putting less pressure on the markets, prices go down, and therefore, compared to reference scenario, therefore there's a lot of saving compared to reference scenario in the from the consumer's point of view in the our alternative scenario. But in order to achieve some of the savings there, the consumers have to make some investments to use equipments, to use capital stock, which are perhaps more efficient, but in many cases more expensive, and they have to make some investments compared to reference scenario from their own pocket. But in some, they are better off viewed from a macroeconomic perspective. To sum up, the from the consumer's point of view, the from economics point of view, the deferred investment scenario is the worst case for the consumers. Reference scenario is in the middle, and alternative scenario in general, in macro perspective, provides good perspectives from a consumer's point of view. I am going to finish my presentation. I'm just trying to sum up some of the issues I have tried to highlight. The first one is the as we try to tell you, the governments in our reference scenario, if they do not change their policies, the global energy needs are going to increase more than 50% between now and 2030. I tried to discuss with you three different scenarios, but in any of those scenarios, the oil and gas supply growth from the MENA countries will be critical at different levels, but we need to have substantial increases in the MENA countries in order to meet the growing energy demand. And some of the countries are, of course, more important than the others, such as Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Qatar, and Algeria. As we have discussed in the deferred investment scenario, and as we have perhaps experienced in the last couple of years, the further underinvestment in the oil sector, in upstream sector by the MENA countries, and in downstream sector, both in the MENA countries as well as in some OECD countries, it can bring the prices up significantly, and this could have serious implications on the economic growth. And many major consuming nations, including the US, China, European countries, are considering to put in place new policies, and there is a strong momentum in that respect, and this may well have an implication on the demand prospects as well as the CO2 emissions. This book has benefited substantially from our work with our colleagues in the OPEC Secretariat, as well as many colleagues in the region, as I mentioned, and we believe that the continued dialogue between the consumers and producers, sharing our question marks, anxieties, concerns with each other, may help both of us to have some mutually benefit outcomes for everybody in the world. Thank you very much for your attention.